Luke, one of the things that I've especially enjoyed are these moments where we get to dip back into nostalgia.
And, oh yeah,
and have conversations with folks from our past, and
the good old days. That's how you know.
I mean, I don't know if it's the good old days, but yeah, this was a lot of fun. We had Jeff Paul on for this particular episode, and Jeff is someone that we worked with together back in our days at XWP and those the agency heydays. Mm-hmm. And this was a fun opportunity, similar to the conversation we had with Weston earlier. At last season, it was. Wow, it's gone by quickly. But I enjoyed this a lot, this sort of trip back down memory lane a little bit. But the focus has really been on the past decade, which is the wild part of Jeff's experience contributing to Core. We got to talk about that with him and bring up some memories in the process.
I think it's fair to say that Jeff Paul is one of the most important pieces of the WordPress project in terms of its day-to-day running. He is so influential and so foundational to making sure that everything goes smoothly. So that was cool. It was cool to get that insight into some of the behind the scenes of what goes into a release.
And as is characteristic of Jeff, when we discussed a little bit of that during the episode, he's quick to point out that there are, to name several others who have done even more, and in terms of just the volume of meetings. And that's the thing, like Jeff, he's a very kind of like behind the scenes type of person who doesn't take the credit for it. And that's part of what makes him like so awesome.
The other thing that we dived into was agencies, and especially the big enterprise agencies, and how that whole space has maybe like shaped some of how WordPress works and the role that they play in WordCamps and things like that. So that was quite interesting to look at too.
I liked that. And a fun thing for you and I, recording this back to back. So we recorded our episode with Ray the day before. We talked about collaborative editing. Mm. And then you brought it up again with Jeff. And for me listening, it's something I'm interested in, but you've been a lot closer to it. It was great to hear like Ray's perspective, who's been following it more from like the news side of things, and then Jeff's perspective, who is like, who's in it with the day to day
project. Yeah.
And you put some good questions to him about it. And I quite enjoyed his perspective on, you expressed a couple of concerns about the potential impact of the feature and how would rolling it out look like. And We had a good discussion about the real world impact of that.
For those who don't know Jeff Paul, he is the VP of open source at Fueled, who was formerly 10UP. And he's also on the Core team, the Core AI team, and the incredibly active Tide team. So without further ado, let's jump into the episode. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Big Scoots is a fully managed WordPress hosting company that takes a service-first approach to the organization that they've built, focused on human support, which means no AI chatbots. I moved my personal blog over to Big Scoots on a weekend, and I ran into some issues with configuring my DNS. I was expecting to have to wait a day or two for help, but Zach on the support team jumped in, answered my questions, and got me up and running the same day. The Big Scoots team is also active in the WordPress community, participating in WordCamps, putting on their own events, and sponsoring Core Contribution. They work closely with agencies, tech platforms, and product companies through their partner program, and I've spoken firsthand with many of their partners, and they're great to work with. For Crossword listeners, they're offering 98% off your first 2 months. Go to bigscoots.com/crossword or enter crossword at checkout. Independent Analytics is simple, frustration-free, local analytics for WordPress, built by Ben Sibley and Andrew Mead. If your experience is anything like mine, logging into Google Analytics and complex tools like it can be frustrating at best. Independent Analytics offers you a simple, clean dashboard that gives you the data you want and the way you want it inside the WordPress admin, and it's your data. It's collected on your server and stays on your server. They offer a free version that gives you all the basic analytics you need out of the box and a pro version for $79 a year that gives you e-commerce analytics, advanced reports, click tracking, and more. I use independent analytics on my own WordPress blog, and I recommend you try it for yourself. Go to independentwp.com/crossword. EventCoy is a modern event calendar plugin for WordPress, built by Leslie and Ahmad, who've been building products in the WordPress space for years. When I first heard that they were planning an events plugin, my initial reaction was, hasn't that already been done? As soon as I saw the demo, though, I changed my mind. They've built a great product in the event space, and they're thinking about it from the outset as an ecosystem where other product makers can join in. They have a free version and a pro version that's only $99 a year. I bought several licenses myself, and I'm excited about their roadmap. If you haven't already, I recommend you try it out for yourself. Go to eventcoy.com/crossword. That's eventcoy, KOI.com/crossword.
Jeffrey Paul, when I hear your name, you know, I think of all of the contributors to WordPress who don't necessarily have a technical background. And I've been talking with my own kids just this past couple of weeks about how they could contribute to WordPress. And they say, oh, but we're not programmers. We don't know how to program. And I thought of you. I'd love to know, was it difficult to sort of take that first step into contributing to WordPress? Was that challenging given that you don't have that technical background? Was there a barrier there that might not have otherwise been present?
I think my initial reaction was probably similar to theirs in a, I'm not an engineer, how could I help, right? This is back in 2016. Thank you, Jonathan. Yeah, 2016. All right.
August 18, 2016.
Both
we
of
did
you
our
were,
research.
Both of you were part of that origin story of sorts, right? When I was at XWP at the time with y'all, and the 4.7 release was Helen Hosandi, who was the release lead, was looking for deputies to help out. And Luke, you kind of talked me through, I think you should really give this a shot, Jeff. And I was like, what in the ever living are you talking about? Right? I was like, well, how am I going to help? What am I going to do? And you were just so positive and like helpful. And like, no, I really do think that like your sensibilities, your capabilities would be helpful. I definitely did show up, and for a while was like, I don't even think there had been really much for like product program project managers around at that time. So I think even when I was asking
you
folks,
were one of the first, if not like the, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the questions I was asking people were like, I don't know. How do you think you can help? And so it was, it evolved to be a bit of seeing Helen and Aaron Jordan, who was the other deputy on that release, doing things that I was like, oh, I can do that. And then asking them to be like, do you mind if I shadow you on this thing you're doing so I can learn? And they were like, I actually would love it if you just did it and I didn't have to. And I think that's like for me when the light bulb went off, when I was like, oh, these engineers are burdened by these things and don't want to do that because they're not able to do the things they want to do, right? The things that they are uniquely qualified for. Mm-hmm. And these other things, like to them, were just like a total drag, right? So,
I think it's worth establishing just a little bit of context. When I first met you, Jeff, we were all working at XWP. You were just coming on board, and we had a multi-million-dollar WordPress project. And I remember the strong sense that I had when you first came on board is like, okay, great, we have an adult in the room. Because it's like great engineering talent, some great capabilities to be able to think through and deliver. But there was something about, it's like, how do you manage all this stuff? Like, how do you stay on top of it? How do you communicate this effectively to non-technical stakeholders? And when you came into that project, there was this sort of sanity and calm that you brought to it. And that was instrumental, I felt, in its success. And when you started getting involved in the WordPress project, at least from the outside, sort of looking into it, I'm like, I had been completely won over at that point to just the value that non-technical expertise brought into the mix of like, hey, let's organize this. Let's communicate this more effectively. Let's make sure people are unblocked. You'd done that really well in the professional context in which we'd first worked together. And like it's been to me from the outside sort of looking into it. I'm like, I think I can see it being hard to measure at times, but to me, it's such an invaluable thing to bring to a project. How do we just organize ourselves more effectively?
I'm going to edit that out and put that on my CV, my resume. That was perfect. That was lovely. Thank you. And I did not pay you. Let the record say. I will now, though.
Well, for those who don't know, I wonder, could you describe some of those project management-y things that prior to your arrival were typically done by developers?
Sure. I mean, I think some things like running bug scrubs and triaging things in Track or GitHub probably take a bit more context of the thing you're working on, right? Having a bit more knowledge about core software components. So those things probably aren't the best first path in. It's not the best front door for somebody that's like a PM that wants to contribute. Those are things that with a little bit of time and context that are absolutely things that, you know, engineers just rather be right in code building or fixing. Some of the better things that are a first front door for folks are just like helping write agendas, helping run a meeting. Probably that one is like maybe step two, writing summaries from like dev chats or things like that. Those are all like fairly straightforward.
Wait, but
not
Jeff,
even really a, yeah.
Isn't all this done by AI now? Like we don't need humans for any of this stuff.
Yeah, to some extent, probably, yes.
Well,
more done by AI, but like,
yes and no, but there's something about like, because you're also involved in the core AI project, so it's somewhat in jest, but also I would argue that like, I think humans become even more important in some of these contexts, just have that relational context that's worth a lot more than just the long summary that you might be able to put out from a meeting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely, you know, even if you did take an AI summary from a Slack chat, there is more context for somebody who is present that can, you know, edit that down or understand that something is totally out of context or just wrong, right? So it still does take somebody who is cognizant and aware and not just a non-sentient being.
And I remember when I was the release lead for, I don't know, 491, I want to say, there was a lot of just getting in touch with people and running around going, oh, we'd really love to include this ticket. We'd really love to. We're managing spreadsheets of going, oh, this is going to be in, that's not. I'm reaching out to you on Slack. I'm reaching out to the other and trying to just wrangle is the word we use, isn't it? Everybody into some sort of a release.
Yes, wrangling is probably a good describer. Herding of cats, that sort of thing.
So the I'd love to talk more about sort of the current state because you have the vantage point of 10 years now, just about, of contribution to the project. You've seen a lot of things. But one more little sort of vignette before we jump into that. One of the things I remember sort of most distinctly about you, I mentioned the calm, the professionalism. There's also this kindness that I feel like you've you've consistently brought into the work that you've done. And one of the best gifts that I've experienced, I'm going to describe this for folks who are just listening only, is I'm holding this little Lego minifig that has my, like, I had a shorter beard at the time, but you gave me and a bunch of us all these little Lego minifigs while we were back at XWP. And I've kept this with me all this time. And I'm like, it was such a thoughtful, personalized little thing that I've now associated this with, this is the cool type of stuff that Jeff does. So thank you for being you.
Yeah, that's great. I still got mine here. I've got a handful on my desk that like I actually had, one of my kids built me like a little stage for them to sit on. So I've got my collection here. This isn't a visual podcast, I don't think. So those listening in won't see it, but yeah.
You had the little WordPress logo on a minifig, which is super cool.
So that was the first one I made. That I made one for Helen, Jorben, and myself after 4/7 and gave those to them because somebody clued me in that for major releases, sometimes the like core folks will give each other like a little tchotchke or you know something from their hometown. And I was like, what the heck am I going to make for Helen and Jorben? Like, and I don't know, but somehow I saw this, I think it's minifigs.me. I found this site. And so I made that for them. And then, did the one for friends at XWP on projects and then did it also for folks at 10 Up. And
I think you mean Fueled.
Well, now Fueled. Yes. Thank you for the segue there. Fueled and 10 Up. But I don't actually, I guess I do probably do need to create a Fueled one now too. But yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that transition. What happened there with 10 Up and Fueled?
Yeah. So they were separate agencies at the time. Fueled operating more strongly in the mobile app product design space. 10 Up more in the website design engineering specifically within WordPress. And the merger closed, I think, September 2023. Two businesses together, theoretically now, both had client business that was lost, in the agency space because they weren't able to do effectively the thing that the other part of that business did, right? And so, the Hilton, right? They want a full digital experience that includes mobile, desktop, native app sort of thing. And those two companies individually could not win that business, but then together is, those are the types of things you can win. That's 2.5 years ago now. Although we were operating together before that, before the closure of the merger. But so now, primarily go to market is Fueled, although everybody in the WordPress space for the most part understands 10 Up historically and is still getting used to Fueled. So typically put Fueled and 10 Up or Fueled plus 10 Up whenever I'm at conferences or events to try and introduce the name. So thank you for the plug there. I appreciate it.
Yeah, there's that historical, I think of it as a trifecta of frenemies of you've got 10 Up, Human Made, and XWP. But that really is more historical now, isn't it? That things have somehow, and am I missing anybody, do you think, in that sort of high-level enterprise agency space?
There are others. You could probably go to like the WordPress VIP agency page and go from top down, right? I'm sure Ali, I'm sure Big Byte form before they got purchased, right, are probably ones that are up there. I know folks at, web dev studios, one of the topics we want to touch on is contribution paths. I know that they've got one that's kind of unique to them. There are some that are more pitched towards enterprise work, some towards, SMB and in between. So, I think you were saying about frenemies of sorts.
Especially through the lens of contribution, because those were the ones that initially, I think, were having some of the biggest impact. Like Human Made back at the end of the day, REST API was a big contribution on their side. 10 Up had already been doing quite a bit. XWP, we've been looking for any opportunities to weave that into the projects that we were taking on. So there was quite a bit there. And I think you were, you were a great example of that initially. Through at the XWP lens. You did that on your own time. You worked hard at that. And then eventually, I forget how long after, you ended up moving to 10 Up and got to then focus at that point on dedicating even more time and energy to contribution.
Yeah, that's right. I think the time at XWP was pretty heavily focused on client work, the one that you mentioned earlier and some others. And over the time there, I had wanted to do more product development and less client-directed site development. And one of the things at XWP early on was partially funded, and then during the 4.7 release cycle, after that, after I kind of got in that first taste, I stuck around for 4.8, 4.9, and then team rep for core. And all those intervening months, year plus, I think was self self-funded, and so wanting to get more into product development, wanting to get more into, you know, contributing to the open web as part of a role, was fortunate in reaching out to some folks that Helen introduced me to Jake Goldman, had a conversation at WordCamp US 2018 probably. And then, you know, made the jump to 10UP and the shift into more product development and, you know, working to build the open source practice, I say here, now fueled in 10UP. So that was kind of the arc from XWP to 10UP and the reason for leaving XWP and, unfortunately, fine folks like y'all that were there at the time.
It's a difficult thing for agencies. Actually, this is a recurring theme in the conversations I've been having in the last couple of weeks, to find a return on investment when it comes to sponsoring WordCamps. And like you just said, like the conversations that happen at WordCamps, how can you quantify that, you know, and then also contributing to core? And this is a problem that the project has had since the beginning, probably still has. How do you think agencies, especially smaller agencies too, can justify spending time on just contributing, paying staff to contribute?
Yeah, I mean, that is the hardest conversation to have with leadership at, whether it's an agency, a host, a product shop, right? Of why should we not spend time on a thing that's a direct line to revenue generation and spend it on something that at best has maybe a theoretical dotted line to potential revenue generation, right? And I think the answer to that probably differs based upon, you know, what that company's key focuses are. I think sometimes
their values too.
Sure, right. Some may have more care for the open web than others, and you know, coming to 10UP and now fueled, I you know, fortunate that Jake Goldman, the president and founder of 10UP, really, I think to his core, feels that, you know, he was successful in building 10UP because it rode on the back of the WordPress project, and that it was paramount to giving back to that so that that project had longevity, such so that then 10UP also had longevity, right? And that it's, you know, to him, I think it felt like morally, ethically, the not just the right thing to do, but like Ooh. It would be a poor business decision not
so
to.
So that begs the question then, do big agencies contribute, or do contributors become big agencies?
You putting the chicken and the egg in front of me, I guess.
Yeah. there's not an easy answer. I'd like to switch tracks a little bit. I want to just go down one little rabbit hole that's just like a personal pet thing of mine. It sort of came up a bit earlier. And let's just see where this one goes. I've been thinking a lot about the way that the WordPress project runs meetings. And the way that it's done has a very specific style. It has a very specific process. It's all text-based. There are recurring meetings, and there's a particular way of introducing the meeting. There's a particular way of going through an agenda. There's a certain maybe unspoken expectations around when the meeting will continue to the next agenda item before people have had their say. There's like a particular use of threads, particular use of emojis. There's a whole thing around meetings, and it seems really, really specific to the WordPress project. I've never seen it or heard of it anywhere else. And you probably have more experience running these meetings than anybody else on the planet. And I'm wondering, do you think that these meetings, this format, whatever it is we're doing here, is there a method to the madness? And can that method maybe be applied in other contexts?
They are very particular. I would say that maybe Francesca has run more than I have at this point. I'm sure there may be some people, Jen Milo and others before me, that may have also run more. I do like them for their rather particular structure, to some degree, tight confines that help not get too far off track, although there's plenty of meetings that have gone off track that I've either tried to wind back or myself maybe have taken off track. I have used the format at Fueled and 10 Up, running team meetings occasionally when it didn't make sense to be on camera, although for things where it makes this sense to be synchronous and on a camera, I enjoy that. In fact, the core AI team does have a weekly that is actually a video chat, which is somewhat unique to within the WordPress project. Most are, like you said, Slack conversations. I think one of the things that's nice about them is you can probably multitask and still be very participatory, where if you're on a video chat and multitasking, you're probably losing context pretty quickly. Part of that is probably being able to scroll back, a couple minutes and catch up without really needing to be able to do that on a video chat.
I think also like enabling participation for non-English speakers, it's much easier to read English and maybe use translation tools if needed than it is live.
Right. And you can easily lurk. You can not even call out that you're there and present. When I first started contributing during the 4/7 cycle, there was a lot of I think I probably emoji reacted that I was there, but for sure did not ever type, quote unquote, say a thing, right? Which definitely allows folks to, just watch.
You'll learn how it's done too.
Yeah. Right. Whereas, a video call, maybe somebody might Socratically pull you into the conversation and then you freak out and close your browser, right? Or stay in the conversation. I don't know. I think it does allow for probably more, maybe not participation is the right word, but observation.
Other formats might not. It makes it more accessible.
Especially for time zone challenged people like me.
Or maybe we're time zone challenged and you're the only right one, right? Let's flip it on its head.
All right. So one of the things that I'm curious about, Jeff, you've now had just about a decade of contribution and admittedly sort of ramped up over time, right? Like, so you were doing a mix of things and you caught the bug early on. As you think back over that period of time, I'm curious if there are any particular experiences that stood out to you or things that surprised you. Like you were seasoned kind of going into this. You'd had a lot of experience in project management, working on team projects. That's a lot of the value I think that you brought is not only were you like motivated and interested in it, you also had a lot of real world skills that you were bringing. But it's also a pretty unique project and a unique ecosystem. And there's a lot of things that you learned along the way. Anything that stands out to you over the past decade, things that surprised you or what may be?
The first one that jumped to mind was really sometimes even when it feels like you have the right, feature or product definition, you can see there's a market for the thing. That there's firsthand pain that you've experienced, and thus the thing makes sense and feel like others have the same problem. That even when you feel like all those things exist, sometimes the timing isn't right, or somehow you're just not able to maybe market or explain the thing. Thinking specifically, and this might be twisting the dagger for y'all as well on the topic, is Tide, and going back to the work that started internally at XWP in building that tool for ourselves, and then feeling that there was value to the project and getting some agreement within the project to bring it in, and then running into a brick wall trying to help show the value to other teams. You know, now there are things like the plugin team has their own tooling, the plugin check plugin, and other tooling that they have to, you know, help identify issues in plugins that they're reviewing, whether that's on their own or feedback to plugin developers. You know, that was definitely a thing that we were trying to describe as functionality that Tide could perform and was able to do, but just for reasons that we were never really able, I guess, to knock on the right door and have the right person answer to help unleash some of that value. So, you know, that was a fairly hard learning of like a thing that also many of us spent a lot of time on, sometimes funded by XWP, sometimes personally contributed to, you know, see it get
funded also by first, Google.
Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, feeling like there was a strong value for it and getting some agreement, and then it just kind of dying on the vine, and it poor thing is still out there.
This is actually a great example because it does bring back a lot of memories. We have a lot of shared context amongst the three of us for this. Like for those who don't know much about it, this was a project that that came about in XWP. Luke, I think you were like ground zero with some of the early sort of ideation and concepting. Google provided some initial funding to XWP to build out a proof of concept. And then, Luke, you can catch us up on some of like any of the relevant history that I'm missing. But to me, the key thing that stood out, Jeff, is that I agree with you. There was this clear sense of this is useful. This can solve some real value. Folks could use this. There was a lot of just the pieces there. We really struggled with getting that adoption. But the thing that stands out to me is the work that you did in sort of project program management for it is what kept it alive over the years. Like there were so many Tide meetings where I would see it happen. There's nothing to really say or really do, but there's something about that sense of presence that over the years, there's been numerous times where I've made a reference to that project to others who, and it's hard to know about the influence or the impact of a thing. Right? It didn't do what exactly we thought it was going to do, but I've seen multiple ways in which others have drawn inspiration or made reference to it. And the continuity that you brought by looking at it through the lens of like, hey, this makes sense. We're going to manage it. We're going to keep it going. It's an interesting project, like for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. No, a lot of Tide chats that were Derek Herman and myself just catch up saying, hey, not much. Yeah, not much. All right.
So that's one thing that stands out to you, this idea that something that seems like it could just be a good fit, sometimes for reasons that just don't really make sense, just don't find that market fit, I guess, or just something's off in the adoption. Yeah, anything else that stands out to you?
Another one that I... that the second thing that came to mind, whether it's a great response or not, it's what came to mind. So that's what you're going to get.
I love it.
Is living through a version of WordPress history that kind of repeated itself, thinking specifically about the 5.0 release cycle and the introduction of Gutenberg, and that the time leading up to that release was extremely prolonged for reasons at the time, but it had been an earlier lesson in WordPress history of, you know, deadlines aren't arbitrary, and you know, we set a release cadence and we release, you know, on that cadence, and it was kind of broken during the lead up to the 5.0 release. You know, certainly feels like in hindsight perhaps things could have been shipped sooner, but you know, it's that eternal trade-off of when is good enough good enough. But it was just interesting, you know, because you might read about in, you know, WordPress history that there were releases that went on forever because of trying to just get that one last thing in, trying to continue to polish, right? And then it just, then you spiraled so far past the timeline, what's it matter if you do one more thing, right? And then having that as a don't do this and then have lived through doing it anyway was just an interesting scenario to be in as somebody who is a product, project, program person who innately is attuned to deadlines and deliverables and velocity, and yet still seeing or allowing a release to go for that long.
It's interesting. You made reference to constraints earlier. Within the context of the meetings, right? Like there's some pretty like fixed constraints to how the meetings are done. And there's also a freedom that can come in that because someone can observe and sort of whatever the case may be. And that's an interesting thing within an open source project because you're dealing with this very, at least from my perspective, this very, hard to pin down resource, right? Of like, you can have the energy of a volunteer, super motivated, get a bunch done, but then something could happen and like something that felt like it was a lock for release ends up not getting finished because like their attention had to wane. Like there's all sorts of things that can come up that I think could really throw off sort of what you're expecting from like a project management perspective compared to your typical commercial like types of projects. How have you dealt with that like over that
period
of time?
It's hard, particularly with contributors who are volunteering their time.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's literally the response I was going to dive into there is that like that is quite literally the hardest thing of, especially as a release lead or somebody on a release squad where you have going into that release a set of features or things you are expecting to deliver on, and there are people theoretically lined up working on it, and life, be that work or personal, may take those folks away, and nobody really has control over that, especially when they're volunteers. And even when they are sponsored, like sometimes things happen, right? And sponsored volunteer time just retracts. That's definitely the hardest thing, especially when, you know, there may be perhaps it happens across multiple features in a release. And as a lead or somebody on the release squad, you start to panic a little bit and think of like, oh gosh, well, what's going to be the tentpole thing? What's going to be the top of the about page, right? Like what are we going to put on the news blog post about this release? But, you know, fortunately, the project is large enough and there are enough people showing up day in, day out, contributing, and, you know, committers that are reviewing and getting stuff in that, like, there's always something, right? There's always, you know, things that you're able to figure out. You know, sometimes we need to lean a bit more on the marketers and the copy editors to help us, you know, polish what's there to tell the story, but, the lack of control in a, you know, a myriad matrixed relationship of, you know, people from different companies or, you know, individual contributors with no real connection to each other that says I have to show up and I have to deliver on this thing by this date. And yet the project still manages to move forward and, you know, ship things is, it's quite lovely.
So speaking of shipping things, what do you think the likelihood is that we will ship collaborative editing?
I feel like I was set up for this question. So collaborative editing, I assume you mean real-time collaboration.
Real-time collaboration,
And not further iterations on... asynchronous of you know notes.
Which the notes feature, by the way, I think is amazing and one of the best features added to WordPress in a long time.
There are a couple things that I would have loved to have gotten into 6.9 and things that I think make it even more powerful, especially to folks who have, you know, multiple people that are working on a WordPress site, which that's for the most part the heavy users of notes. But yes, back to real-time collab. Yeah, look, VIP has had this working in their environment since last fall, right? They've had customers use it since then. They obviously have the benefit of additional infrastructure as needed to make that real-time collab feel really graceful, right? And that doesn't need to necessarily have a, you know, a progressive fallback to maybe not as graceful real-time collaboration, where somebody on, you know, a VPS install or something relatively underpowered or just doesn't understand or want to or know how to spin up a node server kind of thing to have that more powerful real-time interaction, right? So VIP has had this working for a while. I've seen it in practice. It's, you know, quite fantastic, but it's also something that we have to make sure we, when I say we, meaning the WordPress project and shipping it, that the base experience for somebody who is non-technical, whose host is not, you know, either not able to, or they don't want to pay for, or can't have, you know, additional server components to help power that experience, that they still have something that's valuable and useful, and that it doesn't just, you know, slow their editing experience or degrade it in a way where a 7.0 release that theoretically includes real-time collab is an absolute bomb for them, right? So it's making sure that the feature, you know, can still deliver for folks that are, you know, in that orbit.
So you're talking a little bit about like a bifurcation of WordPress, especially in the hosting sphere, of people who they either have the cool nodey features that require extra server configuration or they don't. I wonder if that will end up being like on host management pages and choose your plan with the, you can choose good WordPress or choose the dodgy WordPress that doesn't have all of the cool new features.
I'm sure that's what they're going to call it.
Yeah, cool and dodgy. But I mean, the thing is that it opens a door, right? Real-time collaboration is great. And I'm looking forward to messing around with it outside of the sandboxes that it's already available in. But like, then what's next also, if we have that bifurcation precedent?
I wouldn't worry about it, right? Here's why. One, I look at my site, jeffball.com, massive traffic, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I don't need real-time collab for me and myself, right? You know, my friends that own a board game shop here in town and a couple others, like, they don't need it for their site, right? So there's definitely somewhere, like, it's almost like, who cares? Like, you're reading the about page, like, whatever, the real-time collab, I don't need it, right? And there are plugins in the space that, you know, help with caching, right? That, you know, maybe that's bundled with some plans on host. Maybe you get better caching on higher-end ones. So, like, there's already things there's already things that are creating that bifurcation, if you want to use that word. But I don't think it lessens the dodgy, the base WordPress experience, right? I think that base WordPress experience is still, you know, extremely useful and valuable. And as your needs for creating and publishing content, you know, expand towards like an enterprise uses, then some of those other things become more palatable, and, you know, then you get onto, I forget what you called the non-dodgy plan, but that's when you move up to that one.
The cool plan. Yeah.
Cool plan.
No, you make a really excellent, excellent point there, especially comparing to object caching, because, and WordPress does include object caching separation depending on what you've got available on your server. It does the same for making external calls. It does the same for database stuff. And so in that sense, it's not really a precedent. The precedent has already been set. When you're talking a little bit about how, like, for a lot of people, it's not really going to be a big deal if they miss out, it makes me think maybe it should be in plugin territory, but we can leave that alone.
Well, hold up. Before we leave that alone, because that's part of my thinking, is like, are we setting a press? Is this really about taking WordPress to a future where, because in my head, I've always had this, like, it has to be for the 80%, right? Like, if it's going to be part of core. Right. And that 80% is shifting over time. Like there's something to be said about how the use of WordPress has evolved. Like the majority of people using WordPress today are not blogging. Right. So there's a fair thing to be said about that shift over time.
And I think there's something to be said for like skating to where the puck's going to be. And maybe by implementing collaborative editing in core, maybe that is a way of getting people to work on a website together, where just because it wasn't possible before, we never had those systems in place. But then if it's going to be gated to the most expensive plans,
maybe it's not. I'm just excited to see what happens there, basically.
If I were to guess, it's a little bit more akin to some of what we saw with WooCommerce in terms of like how hosting responded to it, because it required for a lot of them to say, okay, we need to provide a little bit beefier of an experience around this. We need to do some things differently for this. But yet there tended to not be as much pushback on like businesses willing to pay for that because of the value associated. So the idea is, like, to me, if people are getting value out of collaborative editing, there's a higher likelihood that they're going to be okay, or they'd be willing to pay for a higher plan that would justify that. But I guess we'll see. Interesting. Jeff, last thing I'm curious about for now. For folks, one of the things that I feel like you've done really well is to demonstrate what someone with, you know, less of a technical background can do, and the impact they can have bringing their skills into the project. And that's something I've seen happen with others. From your experience now, having been in the space and seeing all these different like types of volunteers come in, the first question I've got is, what types of folks are you looking for more of? What do you think the project could use more of at this point? And then the other question is, for folks who might be listening that are interested in contribution, just any general guidance that you would give them, especially speaking to the folks that have less of a technical background.
I mean, look, the project is probably most flush with engineers, though there's always going to be more that's out there in Track or GitHub that somebody could pick up and work on that's a, you know, good first bug, good first issue. So certainly don't shy away if that's your bag. Again, whether that's PHP or JavaScript or what have you. You know, I think there was a blog post that I published back at XWP that I then kind of forked to put out on my own blog that, like, you know, look, really every role that you might envision at an agency or a host or a product shop, there is a need for that in the project. There is, I don't know how many teams at this point, 20, two dozen, maybe more, that on their own are very likely clamoring for contributors, right? You know, the
AI
very
team
new,
not being one of them.
The AI team would love to have folks. I know Tammy Lister's new program team would love to have some folks there that operate in that space. I know documentation team is always looking for help, folks to help, either whether that's during a release cycle or outside of one. Designers, testers, you know, whatever you can think of, there is a place for your competency, your skill set, your interests in the project. Whether that is somebody who is, you know, junior in that profession or experienced, right? There are onboarding experiences for somebody that's junior, and there's, you know, some really big nuts to crack for folks that are experienced. You know, I think the onboarding experience is probably different for everybody across all those teams and the different types of competencies. So, you know, it's not a one size fits all. I know there is a like onboarding wizard, a contributing wizard. I just had it up. Yeah, make.wordpress.org/contribute that was put together that kind of helps walk you through like what can you do? What do you like to do? And answer a couple questions. And it's like, oh, well, here are some teams that might be a good fit for you, right? Or here are some things that the project needs help with. So, Jonathan, I don't think there's like a singular answer of we need more, you know, widget makers, and we only want widget makers, right? It's really everything and anything. And the project, I think, would be foolish to turn away any contributor, right? You know, you look at WP credits, they're, you know, trying to get even further into integrations with higher ed, right? Colleges and universities, yeah, and bringing folks in at that level. And so even people that have like perhaps no context of WordPress, trying to get them exposed to it and contributing is fantastic.
What I think has been essential as well has been the work that's gone into, and you've been an important part of this as well, of recognizing those like less technical. Like, there are some things that are a lot easier to recognize. If you have a commit, we can run that programmatically and we can like make sure that there's a reference that's made to it, right? I remember some of the work that you do early on, like, hey, like checking to make sure that folks' contributions were all recognized, even if it was small. And there's a lot that's really motivating about that. And I think that some of those less technical areas can be harder. Like, how do you measure that? And it requires people that are thinking more about the program, more about the project, and, you know, not just looking at the commits that showed up at the end. So I think that work, and I know there's been a lot more of that lately, I think is part of what makes it, because how do you, when you're volunteering, there is something to be said about just the internal satisfaction. We as humans also care about being appreciated for what we do, even if it's not like formal public, but it's, that what's expressed from one to the other. I think that's a big part of what draws folks into it.
Yeah. And I think that recognition, the, thankfulness towards contributors for their contributions. There's still, I think, a long way for the project to go, especially for folks that are maybe not contributing directly to a major or minor release, or folks that maybe are contributing to things that aren't code-based, and having the project properly capture and recognize and thank those folks. I think there's still a long way to go, but I think we do a better job with every release cycle, just because that's the way kind of the my brain measures progress within the project. I think we do a decent job. Could definitely be doing a great job, but we're not there yet.
Last thing for me is, if you had one suggestion for a new contributor of, like, if they're looking at the arc of their first year, maybe there's just a few hours here and there, they're going to spend a couple of hours like on one of the teams that's interesting to them and do what they can.
Especially a non-developer.
Yes, a non-developer. It's like, what would you encourage them to keep in mind? Like any just like one piece of like guidance?
So I think what I would recommend would be, there's a post that Matthias has up, Matthias Ventura, from December 11th, called Planning for 7.0 on make.wordpress.org/core. So if you find that post, I would recommend reading through it. It might be overly dense. It might be particularly technical in points that don't make sense, but reading through it with a lens of, hopefully at this point, this person has a WordPress site, or they've used WordPress, or they've published content in a CMS, right? And read through that post and see which of those things are like, oh, that's interesting, that sounds really cool, or, oh yeah, that bothers me about this, my site or the publishing tool that I use. And then subscribe to the GitHub issue or track ticket for that thing. And when it becomes available for testing during the beta and RC cycles, give that a test on WordPress Playground, right? Like in the browser, test that feature and just give feedback of like, this perfectly solves, I have this problem, or like, here's some oddities I see. Just doing that, we're always wanting more feedback during the beta and RC cycles. And I think there's hopefully something in what's planned for 7.0, and certainly some of those things will probably leak out to 7.1 and later. There's got to be something there, hopefully, that somebody that resonates with you, and then you can just help give it a whirl when it's ready during the beta and RC cycles, meaning when the WordPress 7.0 release has a beta 1 release or later, give that a try.
I love that. That's very practical. And it's a way of, because I think people might assume by default, like, oh, they don't really want my feedback, or like, oh, it just really wouldn't be that helpful. But just to take the time to test something out, to give some impressions of it, to give that context, I can see how valuable that would be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Luke, I know earlier you were upping the notes feature from 6.9 and been working on that fairly closely with folks like Adam Silverstein and others. Like, there was a point in the release cycle where we got a flood of feedback because of folks that were actually testing it out for the first time, who had not helped build it. And there were so many things that we were able to make that specific feature that much better, that much more polished because of that feedback. And we were, we had the typical blinders on where we had been building it and testing it and just had accepted some of those blemishes, I guess. So yeah, you think the feedback may not be actioned upon, but like, guaranteed, either somebody's like, oh, I'm glad somebody liked this, that makes me feel good, or, oh yeah, I don't know how I didn't see that this doesn't work, then now it's going to be better, right? There's feedback is always going to be super helpful for those building the software.
Jeff, thank you for all that you've been doing with the project. Looking forward to seeing what the next years bring. If someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to get in contact?
Probably at this point, either WordPress Slack at Jeff Paul. I'm at Jeff Paul on most social platforms that I'm on, at least. Blue Sky, probably the most active. And then jeffpaul.com. Come and find me on my WordPress site.
Thanks for joining us.